It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 305. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I react to Ty Detmer being relieved of his offensive coordinator duties. Was this the right decision for the BYU Cougars? And who are the top candidates to replace Ty Detmer? We also discuss the recent results of men's basketball and get into a lengthy discussion about the college football playoff. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast. Get this show and other great podcasts at DeseretNews.com/podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. And listen to us right now. Happy, 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 happy. Hey, Matt. Welcome back to the show.
I don't think you can keep doing that one. I think we have to move on.
Happy, happy, happy. Shut it! Hello? Did you...
We started?
Did you listen?
Did we, like, start?
Yeah, we started. Start for real? Yeah, that was a real start.
You're really doing the happy, happy, happy anniversary thing?
Well, the only reason is because our brother Don was all confused that I ended the show by saying shut it. No music.
Which shouldn't be a surprise. Anybody who knows you shouldn't be surprised by that at all.
Well, you know, I close with music all the time. It's time to do something a little different.
We closed with some music.
Yeah.
It was people singing happy anniversary from So I Married an Axe Murderer. Yeah. That's music. Yeah. They were singing.
So your father's a butcher. Anyway, it's such a good movie. So Matt, speaking of good movies, you saw Coco this weekend.
And I saw a bunch of movies this weekend.
Oh, you did? What else did you see?
What else did I see? Justice League.
Justice League. I've heard of that. How was that?
Coco and Thor.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Okay, so we need to talk about Thor here in a second. So let's talk about Coco first. Did you cry? You can admit
I didn't cry.
On the podcast.
I mean, I'm not trying to sound tough here, but no, I didn't cry.
We talked about that on our Facebook Live halftime show, which, by the way, I'm going to miss those. I'm going to miss those. Maybe we'll do some during a big basketball game or something.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I mean, that is the one thing about this football season I'm going to miss.
Yes, the only thing. So I loved Coco. I thought it was great. The music was great. Story was great. Visuals were fantastic. It was Pixar being Pixar and being awesome. How was Justice League?
I really like Justice League, and my expectations for it were actually pretty low.
Mm. Good.
And good. They came in pretty well above expectations there.
Good. Good. Awesome. Well, I haven't seen that one yet. It's on the list, but we didn't get to it
this past weekend. Oh, it was fun. You should see it.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's a superhero movie. I typically see those. And then you finally got around to seeing Thor. Was that your favorite movie of the weekend, or did Coco edge it out?
Coco, I think, edged it out, but it was close. What I thought interesting about Thor is that it had a little bit of a different feel than the other Avengers films.
It had a very different feel. I mean, compared to the other two Thor movies, it was almost like they were from, like they weren't related.
It was almost like different characters.
Yeah.
Had a little bit of a Guardians of the Galaxy feel to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very funny. But it was good. It was good. Highly recommend. All right, so our first tweet bag of the day.
Tweet bag.
Comes from Gary Payne, actually off of Facebook. He says, no question today. Just a shout out to my spiritual brother, Jeremy Ashton, for introducing me to this podcast. Good job, Jeremy. And a huge congratulations to he and his family for welcoming a new baby, number 6, yesterday. This is, we got this today, so I assume that means actually yesterday. We're recording this on Monday night. We were deciding between Ty Detmer Ashton and Jimmer Taysom Ashton, but he decided he should decide a name with his wife and family and not with Gary.
That seems selfish to not let Gary in on the discussion.
It's kind of like that commercial where Buster Posey comes in to deliver the baby.
It's exactly like that. If there's one comparison I want to draw, it's Gary Payne and Buster Posey.
And Buster Posey. That's good. Well, congratulations Jeremy and to his family. 6 kids. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Says the guy with 5.
Dan, and I'm glad they decided to wait at least until today to name the child.
The Ty Detmer Ashton might have been a little bit much. Maybe Thor. What about Thor if they're still considering?
Thor's a good one. Matt is also a solid name.
Mm.
It's biblical. Mm.
Too many jokes. Too many biblical. Jokes.
Bath Matt.
Yeah, can you get the door, Matt?
Door Matt. Wrestling Matt.
You've never heard that before. It's the first time.
Yeah.
Also off Twitter is Dan Roach at BruteDR. He says also, because he'll have a question later, so I'm doing this out of order, is at Bleep Podcast still a thing? I really enjoy it. Would love to hear more episodes. The answer is yes. I've actually got one mostly edited about Legos, Matt. About Legos. And somebody that makes money making awesome Legos. So that's coming. And then we're trying to schedule a Harry Potter episode where we talk about movies versus the books, which I know you love the Harry Potter series. It's your favorite.
I love every one of them that I've seen.
Yes, 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 you do. So anyway, those will be coming out. But Matt, let's hop now into the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news. Zah. What was that?
I really stuck the landing on that one.
Yeah, I wouldn't say you stuck it.
Trying something new out. Trying out something new.
We're not allowed to do new stuff. Didn't you hear Don, what I said about Don with me ending without a song?
Oh, it makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah, it makes people uncomfortable, like firing your offensive coordinator. We'll get to that in a second. So, Matt, get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. The women's volleyball team finished the season 28-2 and will host in Provo at the Smith Fieldhouse the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. They're the 13th overall seed, which is weird. They only seed like 16 out of the 64 teams, so it's a little different. But they will play unseeded American, who is 26-7 on Friday night. And if they win, which I expect that they will, they would play the winner of Kennesaw State, who's 21-4 this year, and Oregon, who's 17-11. They're in the same bracket with fourth seed Kentucky. That's who they would face in order to get into the Elite Eight. Did you say something?
Nope.
Oh. I thought maybe you said something. You got nothing to say?
Good work.
Wow, that was deep, dude.
You kind of laid it all out. You laid it all out there. I didn't know.
I did.
I think I started to talk about Purdue's women's volleyball team and their seeding in the tournament, but nobody cares.
What were they seeded?
I don't know what they were seeded, but I think they're playing in Salt Lake.
Oh, that's interesting. You going to go see them?
I live in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, so no.
You do live in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, so you probably won't go see them, William.
Nope.
Yes, they're playing High Point, and they would face Utah in the second round in Salt Lake if both teams win.
High Point seems like a great name for a volleyball school.
Yeah, it does seem like a really good name for a volleyball school.
Apropos.
There were some honors handed out for the West Coast Conference for women's volleyball. Married Lake was named Defender of the Year. Kennedy Redding was named Freshman of the Year, and on the first team for the WCC were Lake, Cozy Burnett, and Veronica Jones-Perry. So congratulations. Great season. Hopefully next week we'll be back talking about them going into the third round of the tournament. Matt, let's talk about some Cougars in the pros with the first pick in the NFL draft.
Boo! Sit on it all!
The Cincinnati Bengals select. By the way, the Bengals and the Browns played this week.
Oh, is that like the Mediocrity Bowl?
Mediocrity. They're not mediocre. Neither of those teams could play in the Mediocrity Bowl.
They're both so terrible.
They're terrible. The Browns are terrible.
See, why? There were teams growing up. So when we were growing up, there were some teams that were really bad that are now really good, like the Seahawks.
Yes, or the Packers.
Right. Or the Colts were bad and then good, and now they're not. But the Browns have always been bad.
Except for the Bernie Kosar era. Our entire life, they've just been terrible. And then they moved away to Baltimore to become good. It's tragic, really. Don't really care that much, actually. Jamal had a big day for the Packers. Matt, did you watch any of that game?
Yeah, I did watch that game. I watched a lot of that game because this goes back to a tweet bag question we got several weeks ago. I have Jamal on my fantasy team, didn't start him, and lost the game as a result.
Yep. Same here. I'm an idiot. Should have trusted in the J Swag Daddy, and I didn't, and you didn't, and we paid for it.
paid for. I'll never make that mistake again. Sorry.
He's starting the rest of the year. So he had a big day, obviously, two touchdowns, that big, huge play on the screen pass on a third and like
awesome
40 or whatever it was, and it goes all the way for a touchdown. He showed some explosiveness, Matt. Explosive.
And he's hard to bring down at the NFL level. When he's fresh, he's bouncing off of folks.
Yeah, and he had 25 or 27 touches on Sunday night, so... Yeah. Now, granted, he was basically their only healthy running back, but I think he's earned some more playing time for the rest of the season. But we'll see as folks get healthy. And of course, Kyle Van Noy, Matt, he's still awesome, and the Patriots defense is actually starting to be good.
Yeah, Kyle Van Noy is the man.
So if Kyle Van Noy makes the Pro Bowl, how do you rank? How do you rank this from where we thought he was 2 years ago, languishing on the Lions? I mean, what level of comeback is that?
It's like Jimmer comeback.
That high?
Yeah. He was going to be a nobody. He was going to be nobody on the Lions. He was going to sit on the Lions bench for his entire career and do nothing. And now he's going to be a Pro Bowler.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. And obviously he already played a significant role on that team last year and won a Super Bowl, right? So the story already started, right, last year. And now that he's had a full year in the Patriots system, it's become a big deal. And he's become, I mean, he's become the leader of that team, both from a true leadership standpoint, as well as like playing extremely, extremely well.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Too bad Ziggy didn't get traded to the Patriots.
Oh, man, that would be so awesome.
Awesome. What are you going to do?
All right, Matt, the problem is they figured out what they want to do with Ziggy. They couldn't crack the code on Van Noy.
They could not.
It's a lot easier with Ziggy. You're just like, hey, rush the quarterback. You're bigger, faster, and stronger than everybody else.
Well, and he had success early and he's had some injuries since then, but was relatively healthy at the beginning of the career. And that hurt Van Noy too, right? Because he got hurt early. And the thing about the NFL, there's always somebody that just got drafted and that's new that wants your job. All right, so let's talk about men's basketball.
Oh, sweet.
Sandwiched a couple of close wins around a not close game. With Alabama, but at least they didn't get almost beat by Alabama with only three players. We'll get to that in a second. But let's examine this, Matt. So I went from okay, they lose to UT Arlington, okay, in Provo. Really got a lot of people down on the team. Come back, they beat Niagara, but not by as much as they should have, because Niagara's not very good. So, but maybe Niagara's better than we think, and we'll find that out as the season progresses. But I tend to think, you know, they're probably not a great team, maybe a little bit better than we thought they were preseason, but not a great team. And then they lose to Alabama, and, you know, kind of got handled. And then they come back with a dramatic win over UMass. And I kind of feel like we are in for a roller coaster ride this year and kind of similar to last year. Is that fair?
Yeah, I really wish it wasn't true. And I've tried to convince myself that it wasn't. But I really think that may be where we're headed here.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily a terrible thing. I mean, you lost your best player. You know, but let's climb on in the tweet bag, Matt.
Tweet bag.
I actually used climb on in the official tweet out. I've given it.
We need like a sound. We need a sound for climb on in. I'm going to work on that.
Don't work on it. You can.
Yeah, I'll come up
with that.
Don't worry. I'll come up with something.
Yeah, you're done. All right.
It's going to be great. You're going to love it.
Chase Plyle on Twitter says, for men's basketball, plus or minus 3.5 in the WCC standings for BYU this year, #tweetbag, #climb on in. By the way, if you want to be in the tweet bag, at @BYU_RiseShout on Twitter, facebook.com/RiseAndShout, and good old-fashioned email, RiseAndShoutPod@gmail.com, RiseAndShoutPod@gmail.com. Matt, does BYU finish third or better?
Yes.
Yes, I totally agree.
I'm not even going to hesitate there, but yes.
Yeah, I don't think – I think they finished third or better this year. Yes. But, I mean, it's one and two, then it's us, and then it's everybody else. And we're not – we're closer to four than we are to two. Is that – would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's true.
Okay.
So I think the line is kind of in the right place, right?
Yep.
Because the question is, are we going to be three or are we going to be four?
Yes. Okay, so Timothy Jacobson in an email, people still send those, Matt.
Is there even still like a structure of support for emails?
Yes. Yes.
You have to use like an old computer for that?
Yes, I believe
like
so.
Like the kind with like a real keyboard?
Yeah, with a keyboard and everything. I believe you do. So he says this, on a scale of zero to Jimmer, how would you rate BYU's basketball defensive performance versus UMass? Matt, on a scale of zero to Jimmer, how do you feel about the defensive performance against UMass?
I'm going to give that a Jackson Emery.
You're stealing my Jackson Emery.
I am stealing your Jackson Emery. I used it last week, and I thought it was really well played. But here, I feel like it's really well played because we're talking about defense.
Oh, you're good. You're good at this.
You see what I did there?
Yeah,
you
see what I did? There. I mean, obviously, they held UMass to, what is it?
Just 28 points in the second half.
28 points and 36% field goal shooting. I mean, it was, I don't know. It was really good. I thought they, Jackson Emery's probably good. Maybe, I'll go with your Jackson Emery. I'll stick with it. So I thought the defensive effort was really good. I don't think UMass is a great team, right? So it's not as if they shut down an offensive juggernaut, but I thought it was good. And if you look at it so far this year, Matt, they've had kind of a Jekyll and Hyde defensive performances. They did really good against Mississippi Valley State, who's terrible, but played really good defense. I thought their defense against Princeton was good. And then it's been kind of hit miss since then. Obviously, the Niagara game, there were some defensive issues, UT Arlington. But I'd say right now this may be a better defensive team than last year's team. Early returns, hard to say, but as of today, yep. I think that might be true.
But I think this is a good game to look at that, right? I mean, so they took a team that scored 38 points in the first half, held them to just 28 in the second. But there's a couple other statistics here that are really telling. Like 3-point shooting for UMass in the first half, they were 4 of 7. That's 57%. In the second half, they were 1 of 7.
Yeah.
And BYU put together 10 total steals. You know, 10 steals and 6 blocks in that game. I mean, it's just...
And they won without shooting well from... Because that's the thing that had been kind of their Achilles heel so far, was kind of living and dying by the 3-point shot.
And the 3-point shot was not there.
Was not falling. I mean, TJ Hawes had one of his worst games as a collegiate player, 0 for 10 from the field against UMass, 3 assists, 3 turnovers. So it was not a good game for him, and obviously Bryant, Childs, Hartnett, and we'll get to Dastrup here in a minute. But you know, a very interesting game for sure. So he says, is there better defense here to stay? That's a really good question. I don't know if we know yet if better defense is here to stay. I mean, it's really early, and quite frankly, last year I think the defense was better than people thought it was. So it's hard to know, but it could be. I'm more worried about whether the offense is good enough at this point. I think the offense is not as good as it was last year to this point. It's kind of like the Elijah and Yoli show, and hopefully somebody else can find a few buckets, you know?
Yeah, the shooting, especially in that UMass game, the shooting wasn't great.
So he finishes with saying, shout out to Peyton Dastrup for his second half performance at UMass. Matt, according to sportsreference.com's advanced statistics, now again, we're six games into the season, so these statistics are a little wonky as they typically are with a small sample size. But he is, by rate, the best player on the team.
And so this is based on minutes and contribution and everything, right?
Correct, correct. If you take his numbers out to 40 minutes, okay, he would be averaging 19 and 10 and 4.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Now, again, let's small sample size. He's played 41 minutes, so far this year. I mean, so let's relax a little bit. He's played only 7 minutes a game, but he's played really well so far this year. And I think if you look at the team, there's a couple of guys that are surprising me a little bit. Him and who we've talked about before, Dalton Nixon. So some good contributions so far early on.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So Matt, I've got a new game for you. You ready for a new game?
I love it when you throw this stuff out here.
Smart take or Cougar board stupid?
Oh, wow. Wow.
I'm going to give you a statement, and you tell me if it's a smart take or Cougar board stupid for the basketball team. All right?
All right, for the basketball team. Here we go.
Smart take or Cougar board stupid, Elijah Bryant will be an all-time BYU great. Now, it doesn't mean Elijah Bryant is stupid, because we all know right now he's, so far, had the best season. But all-time great Elijah Bryant.
I feel like it's a little aggressive to call that Cougar board stupid, so I'm going to go ahead and smart take.
Yeah, you only get two choices. It's Cougar board stupid. He's not an all-time great yet. Let's relax.
Yeah, but this is do you see the makings of someone who could be an all-time great? And I'm not ready to rule that future out for him yet.
Okay. All right. I'm not ready to rule it out, but if you had to, you know, is he going to be an all-time great? I'm going to say no. He's not going to be an all-time great. That's hard to define, by the way. Let's say top 20 player all-time.
Oh, then I'd go ahead and say smart take.
Nah, I'm going to say Cougar board stupid. Yoli Child's expectations were way too high to start the year. Smart take. Cougar board stupid.
Smart take.
Smart take. I agree with you. This team will be about like last year's team. Smart take. Cougar board stupid.
Smart take.
I'm going to say Cougar board stupid only because they're not going to be like last year's team. They're totally different.
Yeah, but I'm thinking about in terms of results.
Final results, they may end up being very similar. I think I skipped part of Tim's question. I think we will lose a couple of WCC games that we all feel like we should again.
Yeah.
I think that's likely. I mean, Niagara type of game, but where we can't close it out. That type of thing. TJ Haws is the fourth best player on this team this year. Hot take. Smart take or Cougar board stupid?
That's Cougar board stupid.
I'm going to say it's a smart take.
Oh, my gosh. If we agreed on a single one of these, where was he in leading scorers from last year?
TJ Haws?
Uh-huh.
He was second, third?
Okay, right. Third? He was second. Because I remember you schooled me with this a couple of weeks ago. I believe he was second.
Yes.
We are a little bit early in the season to say that he's going to have that type of a drop.
Okay,
I just think it's too early.
Okay, I'm not saying he's having any kind of drop. I'm saying this. Elijah Bryant is a better player. Is that fair? Are you ready to go there?
Okay, I'll walk this road with you.
Okay, Yoli Childs is a better player.
Okay.
Okay. So then the question is somebody else better than TJ Haws? Okay.
And there is somebody that I feel like you could make this argument.
And who is that player?
I would say Hardnett.
I think Hartnett could be that guy. I don't know if he's played to that level yet, but I think he could be that guy. I think if Dastrup is kind of silly at this point because he hasn't played enough minutes, right?
Right.
The rate stats look great, but so what? He hasn't played enough minutes. I think Dalton Nixon could be a glue guy that ends up at the end of the year being more important to this team than TJ Haas. I know that sounds crazy, but a lot of times those guys that don't fill up point sheets, you know, the points get overlooked for the contribution that they do. And right now Nixon's doing a little bit of everything, but he's not doing anything that like knocks your socks off, right? But he is passing well. He's playing good defense. I think he's playing some of the best defense on the team at the moment, and especially of the regular contributors. So maybe it's Cougar Board stupid, but man, it's if you would have told me before the season that any of this might be true, and it might not end up being true, again, small sample size, six games, which is kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah, like you don't know.
You don't know yet. Okay, fair enough. All right. So let's see. Did I have one more of these? Yes. Peyton Dastrup, future superstar. Smart take. Cougar Board stupid. Cougar Board stupid.
I'll give you a smart take on that one.
What?
Just because I knew you were going to say Cougar Board stupid. And we can't agree on one now.
All right. So Matt, going back to what we said before, our brother Don had this to say on Twitter. How great was Alabama finishing against Minnesota with three players, though he spelled it at T-H-E-E-E, but I'm going to edit that. I think he means three, not the players, and only losing by five. Does this team have a shot? He's switching to BYU. How cool was that, Matt?
That was pretty cool. A little embarrassing.
A little embarrassing.
For everybody.
Have you ever played a pickup game 3-on-5?
I don't know that I have. Or like 3-on-4,
and you should win, but you don't. I think there's some mental weirdness when something like that goes down. It's so rare. I don't know, especially in a college game, but yeah, it's kind of embarrassing. And Don is asking whether we think BYU can finish second this year. The answer is no.
Nope.
No, St. Mary's and Gonzaga are that much better than us and the rest of the conference, so no. All right, Matt, Hawaii. We talked about this on our Facebook halftime show. The rushing game was there. Passing game looked pretty meh. But, Matt, my big question for the entire game is, where the heck has Riley Burt been all year?
Has he been hurt dealing with injuries? Is that the story here?
I don't know. I don't remember anyone ever talking about him dealing with injuries. And the thought was, when this game started and it was just Canada and Kafensis going back and forth, getting carries, I thought, well, Burt's got to be hurt too, right? He, like, got dinged up in practice, right? And then when Squally went down, which is like, we've now had, like, 18 running backs get hurt this year. When Squally went down, I assumed, well, is Kafensis going to have to go the rest of the way? Is El Bakri going to get a bunch of carries? Like, or do they end up, like, putting, like, Treneman back there or something crazy, right? And then Burt comes out and has this tremendous second half. And I'm like, what happened to Riley Burt this year? Like, at the beginning of the year, he was listed as like the third, three deep behind, or maybe it was he second or third? I mean, he was high up there and he hardly ever got in the game.
Yeah, it's very strange.
I'm not saying because he had a good game against Hawaii, who's terrible, that all of a sudden we should rewrite history and go back. But it does make me wonder about this staff's ability to pick the right personnel. You know, the passes that were thrown to Shumway, like the design plays for Shumway, for example. Riley Burt, who showed at least, he looked good. I know it was Hawaii. I get it. But he looked really good. Like, fast. So, Matt, any other thoughts on the Hawaii game? We didn't finish with 10 losses. So that's
I'm just glad it's over.
All right. So we'll move on from the Hawaii game because they're terrible. So Matt, the big news, which we haven't talked about, we're like, you know, 30 minutes into this and we haven't talked about it. Ty Detmer was relieved of his offensive coordinator duties. He was not fired, as some headlines say. but he was relieved of offensive coordinator duties. They're going to find a new offensive coordinator, and then that person will decide who stays and who goes. Okay. And typically, well, when this
put
happens,
in the punt team, not sure what to do with Denver. Bring the punt team on. We're just going to punt, and then we're going to make our new offensive coordinator be the bad guy.
That's right. That's right. That's
what a terrible position to put a new coach in.
So we'll get to that here in a second. But let's talk about Detmer before we move on to the next guy. Drew Trautner, that's at Drewski5 on Twitter, which I don't know that Drew's been in the tweet bag recently.
Where have you been, Drew?
Welcome back,
Drew.
Where have
you been, Drewski?
He says this: how many wins would it have taken for Detmer to keep his job? 6.
Yeah, I think if you go to a bowl game, you probably can convince.
I think if Utah State and you need to beat Fresno or one of the other decent teams, I think it might be 7. I don't know if a bowl game is bad as they were.
I think it depends on who the wins are against.
It really also depends on the offensive statistics, right? And, you know, I think if you win 6 games, but your team was still the 120th ranked offense. But the thing is, if you end up winning those games, you're probably not the 120th ranked offense, right? You probably played better offensively. So I don't know. I don't know if wins are the metric, but I'm going to say 6 or 7. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
Drew adds, and I'm just behind Sweeney. I've only missed 1 or 2 episodes in 7 years. Hashtag tweetbag. Well, Drew, you're part of an exclusive little club.
Here's to you, Drew. I'm going to drink a Diet Mountain Dewski in your honor.
That was terrible. That was terrible.
That was awesome.
All right. The aforementioned Dan Roach asks, hearing a lot of noise on Twitter that Ty Detmer got a raw deal in being let go today as offensive coordinator. Do you agree or disagree? So let's start with that, because his second question and third question lead into stuff we're going to suggest. Matt, I think we've been pretty clear on this show what we think should happen to Detmer, right?
Yes.
So
now I think there is some story floating out there that something underhanded or seedy happened in the way that this process has been handled here at the end. That is literally all I know. I've not dug into any other. I haven't really dug into the rumors. I haven't been on Cougar Board, so I don't know what people are alleging has happened here, but at the end of the day, everybody, nobody should be shocked by this news.
Anybody who's shocked, you had one of the worst offensive teams in the country. Those people get fired. The offensive coordinator gets fired. I get that people are saying, well, there were a lot of injuries. By the way, your entire offensive line was healthy the whole year. Okay. Your wide receivers, nobody significant got hurt. The tight ends, you lost MLP at the beginning, but besides getting banged up, you know, Bushman and Baldery were healthy. Now, I know Baldery didn't really factor into the passing game, but he did into the rushing game. And your running backs, I know we went down to running back 6. I mean, Kafensis, who I didn't even know his name at the beginning of the year. That's not true, but you know what I mean? Like, guys, the offense was terrible before the running back started getting hurt, right?
The offense was terrible before Tanner Mangum got hurt.
Yes, and this, I had one guy on Twitter tell me where we were on our 5th or 6th string quarterback. Critchlow was our 3rd string quarterback. He was our 3rd string quarterback from the beginning. Detmer was on the depth chart because they were going to redshirt Critchlow, right? You don't give him tons of reps. You don't do that. You don't prep him because he's not going to play this year. And you typically, but you almost always get to your second string quarterback. More years, probably 50% of the years, your second string is going to play at least a couple of games. So when I hear people say, well, backup quarterback, guys, you have to be able to win with your backup quarterback, right? That's because in the end, that happens a lot, right? Like, look at Ohio State. Look at Michigan. Look at a bunch of teams right now that are going through that. It is not weird to have a quarterback or two get hurt. And to say that he's our 5th or 6th string quarterback is just not true. We're not playing. We're playing the 3rd guy. Coy Detmer
Tanner Mangum was a 2nd string quarterback, came in after an injury early in the season.
Taysom Hill.
We still went to a bowl game.
Ty Detmer. when he started, John Beck. I mean, the list goes on and on. Lots of guys come in and do okay. It's not an ideal thing to ever have your and the running back injuries throughout the year ended up becoming kind of ridiculous.
But injuries slash other problems.
slash frisbees. So was Dick Harmon had a piece in the Deseret News today. Is Ty Detmer too much of a scapegoat for a perfect storm type of season, Matt?
I think there is a little bit to that, but it's certainly difficult to look at anything other than the offense as being the real the root cause of our issues this year.
Right.
You know, and that's been true from the very beginning. That was where it all kind of started to fall apart, was when you couldn't get across the 50 against LSU. And so, you know, I don't know if I'd say he's been too much of a scapegoat, but the focus on that, I think, has certainly distracted us from what I believe are other significant problems that have gone on, right? But I think some of those are going to get fixed with change in position coaches and other things.
So last year, BYU's offense, according to Football Outsiders, was the 64th best offense in the country, okay? They went down this year, they're 120 or whatever. They had Jamal Williams and Taysom Hill in that offense. And all you could be was 64th in the land. Two future NFL players and two of the best offensive weapons BYU has ever had. I think all of the evidence that Detmer's offense wasn't good was there last year. I don't think it's only about this year, though this year, of course, is the biggest chunk of it. The second part of it is all last year, the Detmer defenders and we would probably be in that group, said, well, he doesn't have his kind of quarterback, all right? And everybody was saying, oh, Mangum's going to flourish in this offense. And he didn't. And then it became, well, no, Mangum's more of a spread guy. And once they get a guy like Critchlow, a real drop-back guy, then we're going to really see this offense up. But guys, he's had every kind of quarterback so far. Like, stop with the it's the style of quarterback garbage. Good offensive coordinators take a quarterback, figure out how to use them, and leverage it and win football games. That's what good offensive coordinators do.
I agree. And the other one that I see people floating around, including a friend of mine texted me this today, was this concept of Ty Detmer is just too smart.
Oh my gosh.
He is so advanced that he can't bring it down to a college player's level. So let's look at that for just a second. Okay, the first part of that is, there's so many things you can say here, but I think there's two major pieces of this. One, that's part of being a college coach, and if you can't teach these guys to run your offense or adjust your offense so that they can flourish in it, then you're not a good coach. If you're just that, if you can't take something that complicated and boil it down for them, that's part of your job. The other piece of it is I'm not convinced that that's actually the case. I'm not convinced that his system is just too far advanced for any of these guys to grasp it.
So that narrative mainly comes from like Steve Young, Brett Favre, and others saying how smart a football mind Detmer was, right? I mean, and there were a lot of people that have said that thing. Now, would Detmer...
I'm not even disputing that fact.
No, I'm not either. I think he probably is. And I think if you put him in Tanner Mangum's body, we have a much better offense this year. I think that's likely the case, right? Detmer was maybe the best quarterback we ever had, probably. All due respect to McMahon. And one of the best, you know, quarterbacks maybe in college football history, okay? So, and it wasn't purely physical because he wasn't a physical beast, right? He wasn't, he's kind of the anti-Tim Tebow, right? Tebow was like all physical, and Detmer, I think a lot of it, I mean, obviously he was physically talented too, and Tebow's not a moron, but you know what I'm saying? But like you said, can he translate it into helping these other guys play or not? That's all that counts now.
And I think Detmer is. I think Detmer is a brilliant football mind. He's, I mean, that's maybe brilliant is going a little bit too far, right? But there's a lot of people who spent time with him at all levels who say that he really understands the game of football real well. But I think there's a couple things here, right? He was, as a player, there's some things that he was good at. And when he was on the sideline in the NFL, he spent a lot of time coaching people along. I think he actually had to explain to Brett Favre what a nickel defense was, right?
And by the way, that doesn't make Detmer a genius that he had to describe what a nickel defense is. You could describe that.
That actually kind of just a genius. That particular story tells you more about Brett Favre than it does about Ty Detmer.
It's not really a Ty Detmer story.
No. But I think that what you see here are some of the macro level things that an offensive coordinator has to do at this level that Ty Detmer just did not have the experience or exposure for, that really took away from performance, right? So putting together an offensive game plan going into a game and a string, like a play calling strategy or a string of play calls that seemed to connect or make sense, was a problem. And then second to that, and kind of related to it, is in-game adjustments to what the offense is doing. And he's kind of struggled to do that. And those are major components of being an offensive coordinator and a play caller. Now, you can understand the game of football, and especially on a play-by-play basis, you can be very good at of getting up to a line of scrimmage and dissecting what a defense is going to do and those types of things and still not be a great offensive coordinator. And that's okay.
Right. Yeah. I completely agree. So one of the questions we got asked a bunch of different ways. Well, before we get to that, Jeff Johnston on Twitter, that's at JeffJ at BYU. How not surprised are you about BYU seeking a new offensive coordinator? And then references, a lot of people seem surprised. Matt, I would have been shocked by the opposite, right?
Yeah, I would have been really surprised that they decided to go a different way.
I mean, and plus, read between the lines of everything, Satake has been throwing the offense under the bus for almost the entire season. They were not going to just shuffle some position coaches. I mean, I would have been shocked. So then a bunch of
now,
people...
Is it possible that there was some type of, behind closed doors, there was some disagreement or some argument about what to do, and maybe Satake was setting himself up to make sure that this move happened at the end of the season with all that kind of talk. Maybe I don't know. But I don't think anybody who objectively looks at the situation can really say that they're surprised that somebody whose offense performed at this level statistically ended up being relieved of their OC duties.
Yeah, I agree with you. So Chase Blyle, Justin Whiting, Nathan Robite, a bunch of people asked us the same thing. Is Detmer going to accept a demotion and just stay as the QB coach? So there's two pieces of that. The first one is, will Detmer do it? And the second part is, will a new offensive coordinator do it? So let's deal with the first one, Matt. I'm going to go with Dick Harmon's view that he thinks if Detmer is offered that position, he will stay and do it and be the quarterback coach. So I'll roll with Dick, and I think that's probably true. Detmer moved his family up there. He seems like a pretty humble, team-oriented guy. What's he going to go back to Texas and find another high school to coach? If he's offered it, I think he stays. What do you think?
I think he goes.
I think he stays. I mean, Bosco got relieved of this and stayed at BYU. I mean, not everybody's wired. He was not a career football coach guy, right? He could have done this 15 years ago, been in college coaching, and he chose not to. So
that's part of what makes me think that he decides to just let it go back.
Go do something.
Just say, hey, you know what? Everybody's been telling me this for 15, 20 years. Everybody's been telling me to do this. I gave it a go. It didn't work out the way it was planned. I don't know that he's clearly not. I don't think he's interested in trying to get an offensive coordinator job at a different school. I think he really likes living in Texas. I think he enjoys time on his ranch. I mean, he lives in a beautiful area. He even talked about it. Remember when he was first hired? There was discussion around, on these bye weeks in the fall, he's going to want to go deer hunting instead of out recruiting, right? I think he's more comfortable in that world. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he decided to to just call it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked.
And it may depend on who the offensive coordinator is and stuff, but I mean, I know what I would do if it were me, but if I were in his situation, it would be because I had ambitions of being a career-long football coach. So I would react differently.
Yeah, I don't see any indication that that's what he wants to do. But the second piece of that, Matt, is would you keep Detmer if you're the new guy coming in?
I would not.
See,
I can't win.
To me, it's all dependent upon what you want to do. And we'll get to this in a second, because Ramsey Cox has one of the best questions that we got asked for the show. That's at Ramsey Cox on Twitter. How many recruits do we stand to lose with the demotion of Detmer? So in Dick Harmon's story, he talks about Jaron Hall's dad, Kalen, who basically kind of defends Detmer, kind of. I think Dick is playing a little fast and loose with how he uses the quotes around his own thoughts. But the point is that he recruited some of these quarterbacks, a lot of whom probably thought it'd be cool to go play for a Heisman Trophy winning former NFL QB, right? So do you think we lose any of these QB recruits?
Maybe, but I don't know that keeping him around as a QB coach, you know, moves the needle for all those guys either.
Oh, I think it does. Oh, I think if their decision was based on Detmer being there, what role he's in, I don't think it's actually that relevant. To me, the question is, will people use this as a convenient excuse to change?
I think that's more likely. I'd imagine for some of those guys, the shine has worn off.
Oh boy, they were 4-9. Offense was terrible. Who else offered us a scholarship? So it's going to be hard to, because people will often not say what they actually mean. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. All right. So let's talk about the candidates. Okay. Nicoletto says, who can we bring in? And maybe the commercials were a bad sign. Hashtag deal-.com, hashtag climb on in, hashtag tweetbag. Jared Rounsville says odds that Aaron Roderick is the new offensive coordinator. So here's what we're going to do.
Rounsville.
I've got Rounsville. What did I say?
I don't know. I can't remember what right.
Jared Rounsville at J Rounsville.
I think you said it right.
I think I said it right. Odds that Aaron Roderick is the new OC, hashtag tweetbag, hashtag go Cougs. So, Matt, we're going to go through a list of candidates who have been mentioned. But before we do that, I'm going to tell you what I want out of the next offensive coordinator. I'm not going to tell you what system, because I really don't care that much. I think there are several systems that could win. But if I were leading the search, which is probably a good idea that I'm not, here's the pool I would be looking at, okay, of candidates. I would want a guy calling plays right now at the FCS level of the elite job, or maybe in a second or third tier BS team where this would be a jump up for him. If it's not somebody that's had play calling duties, then it needs to be somebody that's at a really good Power 5 offense learning from somebody who's really, really good. What do you think? Is that
your pool? Yeah, I think that's kind of the pool, right?
Yeah. For example, like, now I can't think of the offensive coordinator for UCF. UCF offensive coordinator. This is exciting for the listeners, right?
I love it.
It's Troy Walters. Yeah, Troy Walters. He's probably too hot a candidate at this point because of how well UCF has done. But, you know, go poach somebody from one of these other G5 schools or from an FCS school and that's got play calling, has had play calling responsibilities in the past. I am not interested in a retread. Like I've seen, and I think people are joking, but in case they're not, Norm Chow, Gary Croton, I don't want anybody.
Those aren't like real, right?
I know.
Norm Chow's not coming back.
I mean, he's 71. But my point is, like, I don't want somebody that used to be a good offensive coordinator 20 years ago, right? I want somebody that's plugged into modern college football. Now, again, can be a spread offense, can be a pro style. I don't really care. And I don't believe very strongly that there's a system that could work. My gosh, Navy's winning football games and Army, and they don't throw the football at all. So, you know, there are different ways to run a successful offense. I just want somebody that's done it before or has been really close and watching it being done at a high level. So let's talk about the candidates, Matt. Aaron Broderick is the one everyone's talking about. Let's talk about when he was offensive coordinator at Utah. It was weird, right? Because he was like co-offensive coordinator.
Yeah, that's always weird. The way they did all that was just, it was weird.
But his offenses were okay when he was there. They weren't terrible. They weren't great. They were okay. So that's really what we have to look at. Everyone seems to assume he's the guy. He and Satake worked on the staff together at Utah. Matt, I don't think he's the guy. I'm not going to be shocked if he gets it, but I don't think it's Roderick. I think they go with somebody else.
Matt. Yeah, I don't think Roderick's not the answer.
I don't think his resume is what I would be looking for. Because what I was talking about is high. I want a high octane offense that's been awesome, and he hasn't been necessarily associated with that. Matt, the next one is Fesse Satake. You might recognize the last name. He's the offensive.
That sounds familiar.
He's the offensive coordinator at Weber State. They've had a very good year, very good offense. He's also, I believe, Kalani's cousin. Matt, I don't think Weber State in their decent season is what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I don't think he doesn't quite answer the mail.
He's close. He's close, I think, actually, to what I'm looking for. Just not. Maybe another year, if this was a year from now, and he did it a couple times in a row. Paul Peterson from Snow College is also been mentioned. So he played at Boston College, and yep. And Snow was 8-1 this year and averaged 536 yards per game. So maybe. But he was a head coach this year, has been an offensive coordinator in the past, so kind of on the list.
But like one year as a head coach.
You have to assume that he'd be okay leaving Snow to become the offensive coordinator at BYU, right?
I mean, but and yeah,
it's a pretty big. It's a pretty big jump.
It's a pretty good jump, yeah. Right? But people did. I remember, when we were looking. When we did this a couple of years ago, there was a lot of discussion around the success he had had as the offensive coordinator at Sacramento State.
Yes, right, yes. So I mean, he's got the pedigree that I think he'd be on my list. I'll put it that way. Okay. So he'd be on my list. Kevin McGivin, he's the offensive coordinator at Oregon State. Absolutely not. Want no piece of it. His offense was terrible this year and was only okay last year. So, no. No thanks. The fact that he was at a Pac-12 school, don't care. What'd they do on the field? Dennis Simmons is an interesting one. The wide receiver coach at Oklahoma, right?
Yeah.
Now. And also spent time on the staffs with Mike Leach.
Spent a lot of time with Mike Leach.
So, and obviously Robert and I ran a system, similar a little bit to Leach's system when he was here at BYU. He's been called by some people a top recruiter, and he played with Satake in 1994, if I believe the report in the Deseret News, which I do.
Yeah, he graduated in 97, so that sounds right.
He fits my profile, Matt. Guy at top schools learning from the good offensive minds. So,
but I like him. So I like Dennis Simmons. I just, the thing that's missing for me is real experience as a play caller.
I'm okay. We're not going to get a P5 offensive coordinator, right? Unless it's somebody, who's getting fired, right?
Right. So and that's not really what we're looking for.
That's not
for,
really
right?
what I'm looking for. But I hear what you're saying.
But you look at his resume, you look at some of the receivers that he's worked with, because that's where he spent most of his time, right?
Yep.
I mean, he's put a bunch of guys in the NFL, taking some, he's got guys from.
But if he's going to come here, it's going to be for the offensive coordinator job. He's not going to come here as a position coach.
No, I'd love to have him coaching our receivers, but you're right.
Yeah, you're
not going to leave Oklahoma for the same job in Provo.
No, to make less money in a place where you have to spend more money to live. No, I don't think so. Jason Beck, not John Beck, Jason Beck, the other Beck. He was a coach here at BYU, obviously, until recently, and he's at Virginia right now. I'd say no to this one. I think that would be weird to come from Virginia to here.
Yeah, and I think that he's one of the – I don't think you can bring somebody from Broncos staff back in. That just – there's a lot of weirdness.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm with you there. Another one that has come up, Matt, is Jeff Grimes. He played offensive line at BYU. He is currently the offensive line coach at LSU. We're familiar with them.
Offensive line coach and running game coordinator.
And running game coordinator, that's correct. Matt, you're the LSU guy. What do you think about Jeff Grimes?
I think this one's actually compelling to me. Just looking at the list that we're going over, this one is extremely interesting. He's been around, worked at several schools that are P5 schools, spent some time at BYU. I'd put him in the category of a BYU guy, right?
Yep. Notice I did not list that in my requirements.
Okay.
That he'd be
but,
a BYU
you know,
guy.
It was at BYU for a couple seasons.
Well, and there is an advantage, right? The honor code and all that stuff, if you're a BYU guy or LDS, it's not going to be as weird for you as it is for somebody that isn't. But let's keep in mind, we've had guys come through that were not, and some successful, some not. So you have to really screen for that. But okay, anything more on Grimes?
I think with the three times been a running game coordinator at three different schools, was an assistant head coach at Colorado, has been involved with play calling, and I think he answers a lot of he ticks a lot of the boxes that you listed off earlier.
Yes. And I think honestly next year the best way to get to a good and I believe this now after watching Riley Burt in Canada, the last few weeks, I think we're a running team. And I think you build around run and the pass second. I know a lot of BYU fans don't want to hear that, but I think that's the strength of what we could do really well in 2018 if we want to improve quickly. So bringing in a guy like Grimes who knows the running game and how to coach that and put the offensive line in a position to really shine in the running game, I think that's a good deal for us. So I like Grimes a lot as a potential. The last one I'm going to mention, and obviously this is not an all-inclusive list, right? This is just some that have been mentioned so far. It's Justin Waltersheed. He is helping the SUU team to one of their best times ever. They're ninth in total offense in FCS and going to the playoffs. I think them and Weber State play each other this weekend.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is funny.
It's crazy.
But anyway, he was, he's coached at Utah a little bit as a grad assistant, different things, and stepped in as offensive coordinator the last few seasons after Gary Croton left SUU. Matt, what do you think about Waltersheed?
This is another one that's got some real interest to it, right? It's been around a little bit, done a couple different things, and that's, real good, real serious success, not, carried over a long term, but real success at SUU, calling plays, running an offense.
Yeah.
I'd keep that one on my short list.
Yeah. So the thing is, though, I think they need to be broader than this, and I think almost every one of these people mentioned here have BYU or LDS connections. I think all of them, actually, that were on the list, the Deseret News, and I've seen similar lists and some other sites and articles. So what I would say is I think they need to go a little bit beyond that. And but obviously, they do need to make sure this person is not going to come here and be a disaster because of honor code type of stuff, right? And or do that wink, wink to recruits. Hey, you don't really have to live this stuff. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't do that. Please.
That
don't
we may
do
have had we may have had historically. So Matt, let's see. Did we have anything else on the football team? Yes, Satake. A couple of things, and then we'll do the college football playoff. Nicholas Nelson on Facebook, that's Dr. Nick. He says, if I'm Satake, I'm thinking I probably need to show some improvement on offense next season to keep my job. I think that's a fair take, right?
Yeah.
If BYU goes 4-9 against next year, it's Satake out. I think it depends. The schedule next year is tough. I think it depends also on how you lose. If you can't get past the 50 again against good competition, I think maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, I think if the losses and the schedule next season feel like this season, yeah, I think your seat gets hot if you're Kalani Sitake.
Yeah, yeah, I think, you know, I think his seat,
especially
is hot.
Now that because I've always felt like, if for whatever reason, the offensive coordinator, having Ty Detmer as the offensive coordinator, was kind of handed to Satake. I don't know that was Satake's going in position. I don't know what his going in position was, but I don't think Ty Detmer was it. But now he's going to have an opportunity to have some say in who they bring in to run the offense. And if your team still struggles, you're running out of things to lean on at that point to defend yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So Brian Taylor, go ahead.
Well, especially if you continue to have, you know, if you have a couple more kind of high profile players with off the field issues, that just makes the situation more difficult.
So Brian Taylor asks a question on that. He basically asks about culture and accountability and discipline and how, you know, there is some buzz around the program that those things are lacking. Matt, I'll say I don't really know if that's the case, because almost every year somebody gets kicked off BYU's team. Okay? I mean, right?
Yeah, and we've lost high-profile players to stuff like what happened this year before.
Yes.
This isn't the first time this has happened.
Isn't the first time. So I don't know if that's evidence or not. And these things sometimes come in bunches. And again, is it a cultural problem, or is it a couple of people just doing things that obviously are against what they're supposed to be doing? I don't know. The problem I have, not with the question, because I think Brian's question is absolutely legitimate. A lot of people are asking it, and I think it should be asked. It's really hard to evaluate from the outside. The bigger question for me is, it's not the bigger question, but another take on that is, it's very easy to attack culture when you lose, right? And lay everything at the feet of culture. In the end, I think most of winning and losing has a lot to do with culture. I just don't know how to measure if Satake's culture is too loose and laid back, or if it's not a cultural problem, it's just an X's and O's problem. I don't know how to measure that, Matt.
Yeah, that's hard. And I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It's really easy when things are this bad to point at anything you want and say that's one of your major problems, because there's really no way to defend it. The program appears to be in such disarray. You can't defend yourself against any attacks.
Well, and it could be, right? This all could be. I mean, if you look at what have made the Patriots so successful in the pros, or what has made Saban so successful, people will often point to culture, right? And to discipline that's been installed, okay? But if you take the Patriots, you can also point to a guy named Tom Brady, right? And yep, they've had some defensive players that will be Hall of Famers as well. If you go to Alabama, you can also say, well, he has more five-star recruits than almost anybody else, right?
So he also has a gigantic staff.
And he has a gigantic staff, all very well compensated. You know, and he could swap out high-level offensive coordinators on a dime, right? Two former head coaches, right? I mean, he can do that kind of stuff, and most schools cannot. So I'm not saying that culture is not a part of this at all. I actually think there's probably likely that Satake is going to have to adjust the culture of his program going forward to be successful. I just don't know how big of a factor it is, and I don't know how to evaluate it or say this is how it should change. Should be more disciplined? There are a lot of guys that try to be super disciplinarians and fail miserably. So it's got to be authentic, though. Whatever to Satake, and I don't think super disciplinarian is probably his thing. Anyway, well, Matt, let's talk about the college football playoff. Blown up again, Matt. Miami apparently stinks.
What's that all about?
That loss to Pitt was pretty terrible. Alabama, shocker, loses the Iron Bowl to Auburn.
You predicted that one.
I did predict that one. I predicted that one, but I wasn't man enough to really own it last week, but I predicted it. So Matt, the question is, last week you had Miami, Wisconsin, Alabama, and Oklahoma in the college football playoff. And again, these are our predictions. We are not doing what the ranking committee does, which is the four best teams today. We're doing who we think will actually be in the playoffs come New Year's Day. So Matt, who are your four teams?
So these are the four teams I think will actually make the playoff on New Year's Day.
Correct. We've been doing this for like 10 weeks. You should be good now, knowing what
Clemson.
Clemson.
Wisconsin. Auburn. Alabama.
You're nuts. Bama's not making it.
Oh, they're making it.
Bama's out. Here's your teams. Here's your teams. Are you ready? Clemson. Okay. Wisconsin.
Okay. I'm with you. Following you.
Georgia.
Oh, now you've lost your mind.
Are you kidding me? What happened?
You think Georgia's going to beat Auburn?
Yes. I think Georgia's going to beat Auburn. I think Georgia's going to beat Auburn. And then they're in, and then Oklahoma.
Disagree. Well, now, disagree. I agree with you that if Georgia beats Auburn, then I think you got the right four.
Okay,
but I think that Auburn wins.
So let's play a little game. Path to the championship, okay? Let's play a little game. All right. Wisconsin's path is easy. Beat Ohio State, right?
Yeah.
They're in. No matter the scenario. The committee will not keep an undefeated Big Ten champ who just beat Ohio State out. Agree or disagree?
Agree.
All right. Clemson, if they beat Miami, they're in.
Yep.
Same thing. Okay. Georgia, if they beat Auburn, they're in.
Yes.
Those are the only three teams that I believe control their destiny. I don't think Auburn controls their destiny. Do you agree or disagree?
I disagree. I believe that if Auburn wins the SEC championship, they go.
Even if Oklahoma beats TCU?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know that because that's the case.
If Oklahoma beats TCU, I think Oklahoma goes and we just see one SEC team and it's Auburn.
But what if Georgia wins? That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Auburn does not completely own their own destiny.
Well, if they win the game, they own their destiny.
Then Georgia's not in. They take that spot.
Auburn controls their destiny in the sense that if they take care of business in that game, they will go.
Okay, all right. So Auburn's in that group. So we've got, five
teams? Oklahoma does not control their destiny. Oklahoma could win, could beat TCU, and still not make it in.
Who gets in front of them?
It depends what happens in the SEC championship game.
Okay, all right. Fair enough. All right.
Auburn wins the SEC championship game, the committee could take Auburn and Alabama and leave Oklahoma at home.
Okay, all right. Fair enough. So Bama needs what to happen? They need Georgia to lose, correct?
Correct.
Okay, they need Georgia to lose. They need Auburn to win. Okay.
And they need that, and there's several other things that could help them.
Such as
TCU beating Oklahoma helps.
Or even close.
Like Ohio State beating Wisconsin or Miami beating Clemson. Any one of those.
Yes.
And a Georgia win in the SEC championship and Alabama's in.
So here's the thing. Alabama's got a lot of things that could get them into that game. Into the Final Four. Okay. So Oklahoma, we talked about. They're not totally in control of their destiny, but I think if they absolutely hammer TCU on Saturday, that they've got a very, very good chance of getting into the four.
I think they could win that game by 3 touchdowns, and if Auburn beats Georgia, it still may not matter.
Okay, fair enough.
If Auburn, Wisconsin, and Clemson win, it may not matter.
Okay, so is there a scenario for anyone besides those 6 teams? Is there a scenario for Penn State? No.
No.
Is there a scenario for Ohio State?
Yes.
Yes, I agree. If they beat Wisconsin, Clemson loses, Georgia wins, and Oklahoma loses, I think Ohio State gets in. That's a lot of ifs, by the way.
So Ohio State, let's recap that. Ohio State would need to beat Wisconsin,
yes,
and they basically need the other 3 top 4 teams, current top, and I'm looking at the AP poll that just came out, right?
Yes.
They need to look at – they need Clemson, Oklahoma, and Auburn to all lose. No, they don't. Probably don't need Auburn to lose.
No,
but Auburn, they need Clemson, Oklahoma to lose.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. They need that to happen. How about this one? Central Florida. Any scenario they get in. If all heck breaks loose, no. Doesn't matter.
No, unfortunately no for them.
I don't think so. Miami.
Yeah, if Miami beats Clemson, well, they might have a little bit of control over their destiny there.
No,
if they beat Clemson,
not.
That could do it.
No. After that loss to Pitt is going to be like an absolute hammer against them, okay? So are you going to give that one loss team are they above Alabama? No.
No.
In no scenario are they above Alabama. Are they above 2-loss Auburn? No.
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 Are they
scenario.
Above a 3-loss Auburn?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. But are they above a 1-loss? So they're not going to be above Auburn.
Oh, you're right,
Georgia.
Though, because, yeah, if Georgia and Alabama both get in.
Correct. So they need.
There's probably not a scenario.
They need Oklahoma to lose. They need Wisconsin to lose. Okay. And I'm not even sure they get in over a 2-loss Ohio State Big Ten champ.
That's what happens, because if Wisconsin loses, Ohio State probably takes advantage of that. And Miami still gets left out in the cold.
I think Miami has no chance. That Pitt loss is absolutely devastating for them.
So if you're the ACC, you're just praying that Clemson takes care of business. Because if not, you're not going.
You're not going.
You're going to see 2 SEC teams, and then Oklahoma will be able to get in.
Now, the Pac-12, we can just dismiss them, right? They don't have – there's no scenario for the Pac-12.
Hold on. Before we get to the Pac-12, because nobody cares. This Pac-12 is not getting in.
Yeah.
So before – hold on. I lost track of the crazy scenario that I had just thought of. If Miami beats Clemson.
Yes.
And TCU beats Oklahoma. And Ohio State beats Wisconsin.
Yes.
If all 3 of those happen, who are your 4 teams?
It's
that's
what did
total
you, what
chaos.
Did you do, what did you do with Georgia and Auburn in that scenario? The Georgia-Auburn winner gets in. Okay, so let's just say one spot is done. Okay, so you really have 3 spots. In your scenario, Clemson loses, so they're not in. Oklahoma loses, so they're not in. And I think Ohio State gets one of those 4.
Does Wisconsin get another one?
No. No, because Wisconsin didn't play anybody. That's Wisconsin's biggest problem, is that their schedule is – they have to beat Ohio State to get in. I mean, I think the committee's been pretty clear how they feel about Wisconsin's schedule, right? My problem with Ohio State is they got – absolutely killed by Iowa, right? Like,
yeah,
like this is not a great Ohio State team, and they could have lost easily to Michigan with their backup quarterback. right? I guess or corn was originally the starter, but you get what I'm saying. Like, Ohio State's not a great team. Wisconsin's a better team. Everyone's going to be shocked when Wisconsin wins on Saturday. I'm not going to be shocked at all. Wisconsin just suffers from they didn't play anybody. They're really good, though. I don't know. This could be chaos Saturday. But you know what's likely going to happen? Clemson wins, Wisconsin wins, Auburn wins. And then it really comes down to, do you put Oklahoma in or do you put Alabama in? That's the most likely scenario.
And I'm not convinced that Oklahoma's going to beat TCU.
No, no. But I think I think it's likely. Higher than 50% chance, right?
Right. Beat TCU. I think TCU has a better shot at beating Oklahoma than Miami does at beating Clemson.
Agreed. Agreed. Oh, absolutely. TCU is a much tighter team. And the top is TCU's defense. If they just get rolling and shut down, you know, what's his bucket, Baker? Which, by the way, he's phenomenal. He's amazing. And he's a potentially a big head case. I don't know that you need to go after Kansas.
Why are they all head cases?
Why do you have to go over Kansas? I get they didn't shake your hand at the beginning.
Dude, you just got to move on. They're terrible.
They're a terrible football team. You don't need to rub it in their face.
And if you need that, like, as fuel to get fired up for that game, like, come on, dude.
Well, it's fine if you need, like, everybody, like, they talk about Brady, right? He always has some chip on his shoulder against everybody. Fine. You don't have to show it afterwards, right? Like, you can have that get you fired up at the beginning, right?
During the game, whatever it is you're doing from the sideline.
Yeah, just keep your hands where they should be.
Well, here's the other thing. If you're can't, why aren't you shaking his hand? Like, come on. That was just stupid.
Well, that was
just juvenile. The whole thing's just juvenile.
On both sides, yes. Last national college question. Chip Kelly, if you were him, do you take the UCLA job or the Florida job?
Oh, I go to UCLA.
Oh, easy.
That's not even a question.
When people are surprised, I'm like,
I can go back to the West Coast where I was before. I can put something together and I can dominate in the Pac-12 pretty quickly. I go to Florida. I've got all the weird Florida football stuff to deal with. I've got the SEC to deal with. I wouldn't want anything to do with any of that.
Well,
and I go to UCLA and I crush it, and I get them to the playoff for years consecutively.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think he even has to do that for them to revere him at UCLA. I think he just has to be competitive for the Pac-12, their division title every year.
But I think he will be.
I totally agree with you.
I think he'll compete for Pac-12 championships on a yearly basis, and he'll put together a team that will be regarded differently. Like, you and I are running through this list right now, and part of it is due to records, right? But we're looking at USC, a two-loss team, and even in all the crazy scenarios we just painted out, there's not a single one of those where we said, oh, maybe USC squeaks in here. But a one- or two-loss UCLA team coached by Chip Kelly is going to have a different type of resume put together.
Yeah, well, and the other part with the Florida job is, if he didn't win a championship in the first 4 years, people would they'd start asking for his job.
Which is crazy.
Because that's the expectation. Look at what the last couple Florida coaches have done. Some good, some bad, right? But it's pretty crazy in the SEC what the expectations are of those coaches. It's basically you have to equal Saban.
Well, a lot of these schools just don't have a realistic view of who they really are as a program and what kind of a job it is that they're offering and how attractive that would be to people.
No.
They don't, you know, they're kind of wrapped up in this where the SEC.
I feel like Kentucky and Vanderbilt get it and nobody else does.
Yeah.
Like, Arkansas doesn't get that they're closer to Kentucky than they are to Alabama. And that's not actually an insult. As much as it is that's how good Alabama is, right? But it's like Arkansas is like, well, we could be Alabama. We're one state over. We're close to Alabama. Yeah, you're not Alabama. Nothing personal, Arkansas. Or if you really want to get them worked up, Matt, say Arkansas.
Arkansas.
That gets people worked up. When I lived in Kansas, they did call it the Arkansas River as it ran through Kansas. So take that for what it's worth. Well, Matt, this has been fun. When do we find out who the offensive coordinator is? I'm going to say within 14 days.
Yeah, I was going to say it's going to take about 2 weeks.
2 weeks before Christmas. Well before Christmas. So Merry Christmas, Cougar fans. You're going to have another offensive coordinator complain about.
It's going to be great. I can't wait till we all love him and then hate him.
Yeah. Well, we said this when Detmer got hired. And Satake, right? Everyone's going to love them until they start losing. Which I didn't... We weren't predicting. Neither of you...
Nobody predicted this.
No. No.
Nobody... No. No, people... Listen, people can talk about it all they want, but nobody saw this 2017 season coming.
No, I thought the downside was six. I thought six was the worst case scenario as far as losses go.
And apparently, worst case scenario was zero wins.
That actually ends up being closer to the worst case scenario.
That was really the floor here.
No, one. You weren't going to lose to Portland State.
Oh, we'd still count that one?
Yeah, it technically counts. Well, okay. Anybody, thanks for downloading and listening. No halftime show this week, obviously, but there's lots of good college football this weekend, so go watch that. Matt and I certainly will. Well, thank you for downloading and listening. Of course, check out this show and other podcasts at DeseretNews.com/podcast, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!